Today's reading is from Judges. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the oak at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, as his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, "The Lord is with you, you mighty warrior." Gideon answered him, "But sir, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his wonderful deeds that his ancestors recounted to us, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt?' But now the Lord has cast us off and given us into the hand of Midian." Then the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in this might of yours and deliver Israel from the hand of Midian. I hereby commission you." He responded, "But sir, how can I deliver Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." The Lord said to him, "But I will be with you, and you shall strike down the Midianites, every one of them." The word of God for the people of God.
Have you guys read the headlines in the newspapers lately? It is not pretty, people. On the front page, we've got ISIS and the Ebola virus. And in the nationals, we've got the Dow Jones plummeting. And in the locals, we've got shootings and police brutalities. And in the op-ed section, we've got, well, you know what we've got. Division and gridlock, the same things that have ground our government to a stop. So I think, I just need a little break from all of this. So I flip over to the entertainment section, and there's headlines there too. Have you read about the guy who played the father on Seventh Heaven? Wow. Look, I'm not saying that the world is a bad place. I'm just saying that here are the needs of the world, and here is me. Look, I'm barely able to handle my own problems without throwing in all the problems of all of the other people. I'd like to help others, I really would. It's just that when I consider all of the needs of the world versus what I have to offer, I just have to ask, what difference can I really make?
Well, it seems harmless enough, doesn't it, to ask that question? What difference can I really make? It's somewhat admirable. There's a hint of humility in it. But don't be misled. That is a very, very dangerous collection of words. When I believe that maybe I don't make a difference or that I can't make a difference, it gives me permission not to even try. That's very dangerous. If I start to think maybe I don't make a difference, well then why would I volunteer? Why would I ever serve? Why would I give or sacrifice? It's not going to matter anyway. Now, mind you, the feeling of inadequacy is not wrong. We all feel inadequate at times. The actor Al Pacino says he has struggled with self-doubt all of his life. Kobe Bryant of the Los Angeles Lakers says sometimes when he arrives for a game, he enters the arena and all of a sudden feelings of inadequacy are so powerful to him that he starts thinking of what excuse can I make up not to even play the game tonight. Author Brené Brown admits to feeling inadequate as a parent. The actor Will Smith once said this, "I doubt myself every single day. What people believe is my self-confidence is really my reaction to fear." Everybody feels inadequate at times. It's like the old Peanuts comic strip where Charlie Brown is lamenting to his friend Linus about the pervasive feelings of inadequacy he's had all his life. And then he says, "You see, it goes all the way back to the beginning for me. The moment I was born and set foot on the stage of life, they took one look at me and said, 'Not right for the part.'" Have you ever felt not right for the part you play in life? Have you ever felt you're not right for the job you have? There must be 1,000 people who can do your job better than you. Have you ever felt that you're not adequate as a parent? That you look at other parents and you inwardly think, surely they're a better parent than me. Have you ever felt that you're not an adequate member of a team that you're a part of? You're not an adequate member of the church, that you're not doing enough, that you're not even a good neighbor? There is no end to the ways we can feel inadequate, is there? It's not the feeling of inadequacy that's the problem. It's when we let those feelings immobilize us. It's when we let the feeling of inadequacy paralyze us. One of the things you notice when you read the Bible is how God changes the world through people who have huge inadequacy issues. Moses was a stutterer. He begged God to choose somebody else. When God called Jeremiah to be a prophet, Jeremiah's response was, I'm too young. I mean, you've got to have better people than me. The first time Peter met Jesus, his response was, get away from me. I'm too sinful. And yet, look what God did through those folks. So today, I want us to look at another somewhat lesser known hero of the Bible named Gideon, to think about how God can take somebody who certainly feels inadequate, but transform those feelings and use that person to change the world. Now, to appreciate Gideon's experience, where he started from, where he ended up, we have to know something about the times in which Gideon lived. Gideon lived during a period of Israel's history known as the Judges. Now, that was not a title for people like we would think today, somebody presiding in a courtroom. Judges were deliverers. They were leaders God used to change a situation that helped God's people. When Moses led the Israelites through the wilderness during that 40-year period, when they entered the promised land under Joshua, that began the 200-year period of the Judges. They would need, from time to time, leaders who would come along and deliver the people from a crisis. Now, this map helps us understand how they always faced crises during this period of their history. You'll see on the left side, the western side of Israel, a region called Philistia. That was where the Philistines settled, a group of people who sailed from the Aegean Islands and came to that part of the world. They had discovered how to develop iron into tools and weapons, and it gave them a great advantage over the Israelites. They were constantly threatened by the Philistine influence. Now, on the eastern side, you'll see all kinds of nations: Aram, Moab, Edom, all the way down at the bottom, Midian. Now, that's a group of people we're really focusing on today, because this group of people had an interesting intersection with Israel in their history. They had the same heritage. The Midianites were descendants of a son of Abraham, just like the Israelites. When Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers, it was to Midianite traders who took him down to Egypt. Moses fled to the land of Midian when he left Egypt. And while Moses was leading the people through the desert, they went to war with the Midianites, and that is what started the trouble. That began years of antagonism between the two, sort of like a family feud. But this feud could get very ugly at times. Often the Midianites would go north. They would band together with other nations like the Moabites, the Ammonites, and they would invade and attack the Israelites. Now, the Midianites would ride camels because they came out of the desert. I mean, have you ever stood by a camel before? They're pretty tall and imposing, aren't they? Imagine somebody coming at you with a sword sitting on top of a camel. I mean, that'd be pretty frightening. And what the Midianites did was, for a period of time, they led a campaign of terror over the whole nation of Israel. So if you lived in Israel at this time, what is your experience? You are surrounded by people who are constantly attacking you. You would live as if you feel that somebody's always out to get you. Have you ever lived in that kind of experience? Have you ever had a time in your life where it just felt like, whether or not it was real or not, it felt like somebody was always after you? I mean, that can wear you down over time, can't it? That can erode your confidence. It robs your energy. It steals your joy. It makes you want to go into hiding, doesn't it? Because you feel so inadequate. So when we meet Gideon, we understand before he says a word how he represents what a lot of people in his time felt. An angel of the Lord came to Gideon, and it says Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press. Now that is a very odd description. When you threshed wheat, it's like this picture. You would do it above ground where there was perhaps a little breeze blowing, so as you threw the wheat in the air, it would blow the chaff away and the kernels would fall straight down, so you could collect the kernels that way. A wine press, however, was something that was in the ground, at least during the time of the Israelites. They would hew a rock into a bowl, and you would press the grapes almost underground. So if you're trying to thresh wheat in a wine press, it's kind of self-defeating. You're not up where the wind is going to catch it. Why is Gideon doing this in a wine press? Because he is living in the fear of constant attack. And when that kind of inadequacy takes over, it does that to you. It just makes you kind of hole up, doesn't it? It just makes you lie low, focus on what it is that you've got to do to get through life, and the last thing you're going to do is stick your neck out to volunteer for something big, to sacrifice, because you believe it isn't going to make a difference. I'm just going to hole up. So the angel says to Gideon, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Now, if you're Gideon, would you not think somebody's really poking fun at you right there? Mighty warrior, me? Gideon says, well, if the Lord is really with us, why has all this bad stuff happened? Well, that's a legitimate question, isn't it? When you're going through a lot of bad stuff that makes you hole up, you do start to feel like you're all alone in it, that God has forgotten about you, that God is not helping you out. It adds to the inadequacy because you believe that the only way you've got to get through what you're facing is your own ability, and you've stopped believing in yourself. God with us, if you're making fun right now, that's the joke. That's the joke. But God doesn't give a reason or an explanation to Gideon. God simply says to him, I want you to deliver your people from the Midianites, and I'll be with you. Now, Gideon does what you would expect. Me, I'm the least member of my tribe, and my tribe is the least of all the tribes of Israel. What's he saying? I'm the last person you need to be talking to right now. You ever felt that way? There's a big challenge, there's a big need, and you think, sure, somebody ought to do something about that, but I am the last person who's capable of doing anything about that. And once again, God doesn't try to explain how he is the right person. God simply says, if you'll trust in me, I will be with you, and you will defeat them. The first way we keep feelings of inadequacy from immobilizing us is to really believe we're not alone. To really believe and to trust that God is with us and seeing us through. Have you ever found a time in your life where that made a great difference for you? I was with a group of retired pastors recently, and one of the pastors shared very vulnerably about a time early in his ministry. He talked about being in a bad marriage. His wife had multiple affairs, and one night she came home from yet another betrayal. She was sleeping next to him in the bed, but Sleep was the last thing he could do. He was at the end of his rope. He had given up. He was feeling, I can't deal with this anymore. Feeling low, feeling inadequate, and he decided to do something. He got up, he put on his overcoat, he got in the car, went for a drive, and he determined he was going to take his life that night because he just could not take it anymore. He'd be better off dead. He even planned out what he was going to do. He was going to drive out of town, and there was this particular road where he could build up speed, and on a curve, a large tree, he would just go headlong into the tree and put an end to it right there. He had increased his life insurance recently. He figured, at least I'll leave something for my children. But before he was able to carry it out, he felt like God spoke to him very clearly. And God called him by name and said, "You know this isn't going to work, don't you? First of all, lots of people in town know what you're going through. They're not going to believe that this was an accident. Second of all, you're in your pajamas wearing an overcoat. This doesn't look very natural. And thirdly, the tree you intend to hit is one of my favorite trees." And that's when he just kind of had to smile, because he knew God was jabbing him a little bit. But then he felt God say, "I know what you're going through is hard. I know it's painful. But if you'll just trust me, I'll see you through. I'll see that you get through this." And that night changed his life. It didn't make everything easy. He went through a divorce. He struggled with continuing in ministry, but he never thought about taking his life again because he just had this foundational belief, "I'm not doing it alone. God is with me, and therefore I can take my next step that I need to take to keep on going." That's a powerful belief. And Gideon chose to believe it. Gideon chose to believe that God was with him, and therefore he could take a next step. And the next step for Gideon was to go to his father's house and tear down the Asherah pole. Now, what is an Asherah pole? That was a form of worship that was popular in that time. Other nations worshiped Baal and Asherah. And an Asherah pole was an object used as an idol to worship. Now, it wasn't that it was another god they were worshiping. The problem was the way people worship. It involved cultic prostitution. Sometimes it involved child sacrifice, just like this little baby I held a moment ago. If we were worshiping Baal and Asherah in that time, we wouldn't be sprinkling water on that baby's head. We'd be taking its life. So if you're Gideon, and God has said, "I want you to deliver an entire nation, but the first thing you're going to do is tear down this pole at your father's house," wouldn't you think, "Well, what good is that going to do? I mean, that's not going to get the Midianites out of the country." Wouldn't it be tempting to believe that that little step is too insignificant to even matter, and therefore keep you from ever taking a step in the first place? You see, the way we end up experiencing huge victories in life and doing great things is by being willing to take little steps that might sometimes not even make any sense as to how they're going to get us to our end result. But because Gideon took this little step, he experienced a surge of energy and confidence. He realized, "I can do this," even though the neighbors wanted to kill him for it. But his father stood up to the neighbors. Other people came around and they said, "Gideon, we're going to be with you." Maybe in your own life you can think about how it's easy to get overwhelmed by a giant goal, but just taking a little step in that direction is the key. You may say, "How am I ever going to lose 50 pounds? I can't do that, but maybe I can change my diet. Maybe I can start exercising. Maybe there's a little something I can do." Maybe you look at your job and your career and you say, "I don't know how I'm ever going to figure out answers to these problems or get myself in a better position, but what's a little thing I can do to start stepping in that direction?" Sometimes God challenges us not with huge things, but with the little steps to be obedient. Well, that began a series of events in Gideon's life of trusting in God's assurance and taking a next step. He does this action at his father's house, but then he says, God, I need to know that you're still with me. So he puts a blanket, a fleece blanket, on the ground. He said, if in the morning the blanket is wet from the dew, but the grass around it's dry, I'll know you're with me. Well, God did it. Gideon said, well, let's do that one more time. This time, make the blanket be dry and the grass around it be wet. God said, okay. The next morning, Gideon had to say, okay, I know you're with me. I know you're with me. That's where the expression comes from, putting out a fleece. It's just a way of saying, God, I just need to know you're with me. So then he builds an army, 32,000 men. And God says, you've got too many. We need to reduce your numbers. And God makes him reduce the army from 32,000 to 300. Why would God do that against an army of thousands? Because God wanted Gideon's confidence to be in what God could do, not what he could do. You know, everybody here can have a little window or a singular experience that restores our confidence. Something works well. We succeed. We can puff up and we say, you know what? I can do this. But when our confidence is in ourselves, we are one failure away from being back on the bottom again and questioning everything. And God wanted Gideon not to have confidence in his ability, but in what God could do. In fact, it's rather healthy that Gideon might always say, of course I'm inadequate. Of course I'm inadequate to defeat the Midianites. I mean, who am I? But God is adequate. God is able. So Gideon still needed reassurance. God, are you still there? I just need to know. God said, I tell you what, tonight sneak into the camp of the Midianites. He doesn't know why God tells him to do that, but he says, okay, I'll go. He sneaks into the camp, and he hears two soldiers talking to each other. And one of the soldiers said, I had this awful dream last night. I dreamed Gideon led the Israelites against us, and we were defeated badly. That was all Gideon needed to hear. He knew that they were scared. He went back and rallied the 300, had them all take lighted torches. He said, now when I tell you, smash the torches and say, for the Lord and for Gideon. Now why? Is that because Gideon all of a sudden thought he was as great as God? No. He knew that would scare the daylights out of the Midianites. So they had victory. They had victory. But I want you to think about how somebody went from threshing wheat in a hole in the ground to leading an army of 300 against thousands and being victorious because he took little steps to get there. He didn't focus on how am I going to defeat the Midianites. He said, God, what is it you want me to do next? He took little steps. What are some little steps God might be calling you to take today? What are some steps in your personal life, in your faith life, that God might be saying to you, I want you to do this thing. It might not make sense how it's going to get you where you want to end up, but just trust me in this little thing. What might be a step today? As you're thinking about that, I want you to watch a video about an important ministry that goes on in St. Luke's and then talk about how it relates to this matter. Let's take a look at this.
Fox Hill Elementary School is a school that serves grades K through 5. We serve approximately 805 students this year. We have around 40 students who are technically declared homeless.
A lot of our students don't have a plethora of great role models. And so when they're able to see someone and build a relationship, it encourages them in life.
I think a lot of the general public don't understand when it comes to who's coming into our classrooms. We have kiddos that really, in a lot of aspects, don't have their basic needs being met. Our St. Luke's partnership is incredibly vital for us to have because it helps bring in additional adult support for kiddos who can disengage quite easily.
They just show so much love, and they just love when you walk in the door. I mean, the hugs are there. They just know they're going to get, you know, extra attention.
Some people, whenever you don't get it wrong, they get mad at you. But whenever they help me, they don't get mad. They just help me solve the problem.
They literally argue with each other over who gets to go out in the hallway and read with the volunteers because they want to spend time with you. So, you know, where do you get to go where people fight over spending time with you?
Because they want to run over and say, I got an A on this, or I moved up on my reading level.
Then when you start reading with them, you realize they have so much potential. But they don't understand it. They need the encouragement.
I feel happy because they were nice people to me. I struggled a lot with math facts, especially multiplication. I really didn't know how to do multiplication, but when I got in fifth grade, I know how to do some of those multiplication.
Tutoring and mentoring at Fox Hill is a ministry of God's love in the community. I hope you'll join us. We can get you involved in in-class tutoring, we can get you involved in after-school tutoring, and we can get you involved in tutoring at the apartment complexes. Come and join us at Fox Hill.
You know, there are any number of videos we could show about ministries in St. Luke's that would be like that. And the reason we show that is, do you think any of those volunteers who serve there, if they had first been approached and said, we want you to change an entire school, we want you to change kids' lives for the rest of their lives, and eventually change the whole community around that school, how many of those volunteers would have said, you've got the wrong person? I mean, I can't do that. But you see, we didn't say that. We said, can you help a kid 1 hour a week with homework? Oh, well, I guess I can do that. And one step led to another step, led to another step, and look what all God is doing through that ministry now. So is there a step in your life God is asking you to take today? You know, last week we gave out these decals, and if you weren't here last Sunday, you can pick one up at the Welcome Center. And these just stick on glass or a mirror. They peel right off. And last week, we were encouraged to write down the name of somebody we might invite and bring to church between now and the end of the year, just one name. Well, I would like you to come back and write down what's one step God is asking you to make today. Maybe it's a step in your personal life. Maybe there's something that's a debilitating habit, and you are starting to feel overwhelmed by that habit. It has a hold of you, and you're starting to believe, I can't conquer that. Well, you can't. You're going to need help. And you'll find that help with one little step of obedience. That little step might mean going to see somebody, going to talk to a counselor, confessing to a friend, beginning a process of healing and recovery. Maybe it has to do with your work life. Maybe you're unemployed and you're defeated by this. You're beginning to become convinced, I will never get a job or a career. What's one step you can do? I learned the other day about a young woman who got a job because she put her resume under the door of every business she could find, hundreds and hundreds. She just said, you know, I can do that. She's in a great job today. What's one little step you can take? Maybe it is in your volunteer life. Maybe you're saying, God keeps pounding on my heart about taking this step to volunteer, to tutor, to serve in a ministry, to help with kids or young people. What's that step? Maybe it's in the area of generosity. Maybe it's easy for you to believe that what I have to give isn't big enough to really matter. My stuff, oh my goodness, it's just a little dot compared to all of this. But you see, the point of all of this is not to focus on the size of the need, but what we have been given to use to make a difference. That's the question. The question is not, how can I really matter? The question is, what am I doing with what I've got? There's a story about a man on an ocean liner going through a storm. He got terribly seasick, and all he could do was lie down in his bunk. And while he was lying there, he heard somebody outside scream, "Man overboard!" And all he could think was, "God help that poor soul, because I can't do anything." But then he had this feeling like, hold your lantern up to the porthole. He didn't understand that, but he managed to get out of his bunk and get his lantern and hold it to the porthole, and he looked out and he couldn't see anything, and then he went back to bed. The next day, he learned that the man had been rescued. And the man said, "The reason I was rescued is I was going under for the last time. My hand was barely above the surface of the water, and somebody held a lantern to their porthole, and the reflection off my hand helped the sailor to see my hand. He reached out and grabbed me and pulled me in." We've all been given a light to share. The question is not, can our light make a world of difference? The question is, what are we doing with the light we have?